two ways to deal with the debt ceiling, our way and the Australian way.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace Podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. A new encounter today with a debt ceiling, this time Australia. The newly elected Conservative government there needs to raise its limit on new borrowing, with echoes of the debate that brought the U.S. to the brink of default last week. In Australia, is there rancor, government shutdowns, apocalyptic apoplexy?
Well, no. And compared to the United States, Australia's journey to raising the debt level has all been rather collegiate and friendly.
That's the BBC's Phil Mercer in Sydney. Mr. Mercer, the Australians have a different relationship with debt than the United States. They have less of it.
They do. There's always been an aversion to debt in this country. All the governments in recent times have made it a political mission to return the federal government to surplus. So in answer to your question, Australians like to treat debt like an unwanted guest, to shovel them out of the door as quickly as possible.
I was just looking at IMF numbers. America's debt is more than our whole GDP. Australia's is just 11% of its GDP. So you're not past your eyeballs the way we are.
This is a pretty surprising move. Most people in this country thought, if the new Conservative government, that it would raise the ceiling by $100 billion. But instead, it's decided to go up to $500 billion, and the Treasurer says that this revised limit is essential for the stability and the economic certainty of Australia. And he says that it's America's experience that has really propelled him into making this decision.
The BBC's Phil Mercer in Sydney. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, David.
J.P. Morgan Chase, the biggest of banks, is reportedly close to paying $6 billion to settle claims by big institutional investors that they were sold junky mortgage-backed securities. Don't confuse this Reuters report with the other settlements the bank's confronting, including the possible $13 billion one with a passel of regulatory agencies. And despite the astronomical sums here, are these settlements Morgan's biggest problem? Marketplace regular Alan Sloan, senior editor-at-large at Fortune magazine, has a theory on that. Morning, Your Majesty.
Good morning, David.
So J.P. Morgan is one of these too-big-to-fail outfits. What's the technical term they like to use in Washington about these?
It's called a SIFI, a systemically important financial institution. And J.P. is a super SIFI. And every time I hear the name SIFI, I think of a communicable financial disease, but that's probably too tasteless for this program.
So regulators have been thinking since the great financial collapse of 2008-2009 what to do with these things. And it's this piecemeal approach to regulation, somehow reining in the biggies so there maybe isn't a bailout in the future. But that process is ongoing and we'll catch up with J.P. Morgan?
They're proposing to require the super SIFIs to have much higher capital relative to their assets than other institutions. And having more capital makes them safer, but it also makes it harder for them to compete. So I think the goal of the regulators is to get these institutions to break up voluntarily in the name of shareholder value. I think that's the game plan, but I don't hear anybody saying that.
So moving forward, that's going to be the existential challenge to an outfit like J.P. Morgan, maybe not even these huge fines that they end up paying.
Right. Well, the fines are only money. The real problem down the road is going to be hanging together as a giant financial institution. We'll come back in a few years and see what happened.
Now, Alan, you're agnostic about whether or not breaking these outfits up is a good idea or not?
Generally speaking, I'm in favor of breaking them up. But let's say we're breaking them up. Instead of having encouraged, say, JP to buy Washington Mutual, Bear Stearns, first we have them buy all that stuff. And then we're saying, you know what, they're too big and they're in too many businesses, so let's break them up. You can bet that no big bank the next time around is going to step up and do anything.
Alan Sloan, senior editor-at-large, Fortune magazine, thank you for this.
My pleasure, David.
Now let's do the numbers. Stock index futures in the U.S. are all down in the 0.5% range right now. So is the FT 100 in London. And Bloomberg News just reported that American Realty is buying coal real estate for $6.9 billion.
show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
Game 1 World Series, Boston tonight against St. Louis. In an era of TV that's easy to time shift, so many people watching live is a big deal for advertisers, as Rachel Dornhelm reports.
For networks looking for ad revenue, live sports events...
That's hit well. Into the corner.
...are the equivalent of this.
It is gone! A grand slam!
Today, 70% of viewers watch dramas in real time. When it comes to sports, that's seen live 99% of the time. Advertising Age's Michael Learmonth says that attracts advertisers who don't want viewers to fast-forward through their messages.
You know, there are very few comparable events like them, so they've retained their value and actually gone up immensely over the last few years.
It's also the reason subscribers have been seeing their rate packages jump recently. IHS Inc. research director Tom Adams says cable operators realize sports is the glue keeping their business intact.
It's the cash cow, but very expensive, and therefore operators have kind of a love-hate relationship with it.
Last year, a quarter of all TV ad revenue came from sporting events. I'm Rachel Dornhelm for Marketplace.
Inflation in the U.S. last year, 1.7%. The increase in tuition and fees at public colleges up 2.9% for in-state students. Private colleges up 3.8%. This according to brand new numbers from the College Board today. You'll hear a lot about the slowing of the rate of increase at the public campuses. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.